Infinite Waters Radio. Diving deep, leaving no stone unturned, elevating the soul, exploring the mind, question everything. We are the future. Expect the unexpected. Rising higher. Swimming with the dolphins. We deserve more. 360 senses. Explosive. It's now or never. Open your mind.
Greetings once again, thank you for diving with us into Infinite Waters. I'm your host Ralph Smart, aka Infinite Waters, and we're broadcasting live from London. We have a very special show today. We have Aaron Franz, who is the author of a great book, Revolve, Man's Scientific Rise to Godhood, The Age of Transitions, and also a filmmaker, researcher, whose work covers all kinds of subjects from transhumanism to technological singularity, public relations and propaganda, occult symbolism, esoteric religion, eugenics, geopolitics, mind control. And Aaron is no stranger to diving with us here on Infinite Waters. He's been with us before. And really, this unique individual really will blow your mind in terms of the amount of research he's done on these unique topics, but really it's just a joy to have him dive with us once again. Aaron, are you there?
Yes, I am, and thank you very much for having me here, Ralph. I appreciate it greatly.
Well, it's great. It's great to be able to dive once again. I really feel that, you know, having you, I think it was in 2010 on Infinite Waters, was really a great show, and we're here again, so you know, we're just going to dive straight into it. But, you know, I was actually reading your book, finished reading it, Revolve, Man's Scientific Rise to Godhood, The Age of Transitions. And I'm sure the listening audience out there, if you go to YouTube, just type in The Age of Transitions, I'm sure many of you have already seen a phenomenal documentary by Aaron Franz. And you can actually watch it again. But that's linked into his book as well. Man's Scientific Rise to Godhood, The Age of Transitions, Revolve. And Aaron, really, you know, I've entitled this show, The Age of Transitions, Paradise Engineering.
Oh, okay.
You know, but because I definitely feel the world we're living in now, that's where everything is going. Everything is becoming you know, we almost are living in eternal bliss, not just with the internet, but, you know, we're living in a very convenient world in terms of everything is becoming like a paradise almost. You know, we have a lot of freedom with the internet. And, you know, you start your book with, today we are led to believe that war, cutthroat competition, and conflict are somehow going to culminate in world peace. The modern man has been convinced that high ideals like world peace may be achieved through warfare. And, you know, that's such a powerful statement. You know, when we talk about all of this in the grander scheme of things, but really I just wanted to ask you, you know, what was your main goal in writing this epic work?
Well, the goal was simply to understand the issues better, the main issues of our time, many of which most people aren't aware are actually the main issues of our time. One of them being, of course, the whole transhuman project, that which is the goal of basically creating a paradise on Earth, as you're saying. That is the high ideal that we're all shooting for. So ideals are one thing, and utopias and ideas are one thing, and the practical means to achieve them are a whole other thing. And yet the two go together, and that's sort of the paradox we're in, is if we're after a utopia and some sort of perfect society that we have in our mind's eye, how do we go about doing that? And do we use the tools of war to get our way? Or whoever's way this is, you know, I mean, whosever utopia it happens to be, do they have to utilize a little violence to bring it in? And that's a question to ask. And I may not be even qualified to ultimately answer that question, but I think together all of us can get real answers to these questions and understand what this utopian world, this whole transhuman project is, and paradise engineering and all the rest.
Right. Well, I definitely feel that we're living in the age of information, not only due to the internet, but you know, you can look at the BlackBerry, just the whole of telecommunications. It seems it's everywhere. Wireless technology is everywhere. I always joke that it doesn't matter if you haven't got wireless technology in your house, it's still in there because the signals are everywhere. But you know, in your book, I got the sense of, you know, you talked about this overabundance of information can equal to confusion.
Yes.
And confusion is not a defining characteristic of a wise individual. I found that also to be profound, that we're so flooded by information that, you know, it's confusing at times because we become ultimately saturated by this information, which is all around us, whether it be in the truth movement, whether it be in Hollywood, whether it be in all kinds of celebrity lifestyles, you know?
Yeah, that's right. And the way we're living now, especially connected to the internet, wirelessly connected with our phones, that's another way that we're always connected to information, and we're recording information on ourselves. We're also gaining information on our environments from cell phones. So it's this constant connection, this state that has grown to be the norm. That's the normal in our world now. And yes, information is a volatile thing. Not everybody thinks of it this way, but information is not necessarily true or false. It's just information. And one batch of information may totally be the antithesis of another batch of information. This gets into the power of the subjective mind. Like, what subjectively, like, what does your life mean? Ultimately, each individual person, it's their choice to make what the definition of their own life. They create the definition of their own life. Therefore, you get people arguing with each other and using different bits of information against each other to have arguments because they have different worldviews, and there's nothing wrong with that. But also with information, you can get caught up in these little factoids and these bits of information, and you can be dogmatic about it, and that can be problematic as well. But we have to be very careful with information, and of course, purposeful disinformation. Many people are aware of that. I mean, it's all out there, and it all adds together to create confusion. If you're not making choices for yourself, it leads to confusion naturally.
It's overload as well, isn't it? Because it's so much information that sometimes you just want to switch it all off. Because the mind can't even cope with the amount of information which is flooding the ethers at the moment. It's just every day. Even if you look at your email account, whether or not it's useful information or junk mail, but sometimes you have 40 messages, you know, you just hit the delete button because it's so hard to keep up. And it's the same thing every day. You start with part one, you know, what is going on? I find that a great question, you know, what is going on? Because, you know, we can look at the rise of machine. We could look at the rise of the computer. It's only in the last couple of decades which technology has really become comfortable with us. You know, so, you know, the question I wanted to ask you is that, you know, what is real? Because, you know, in terms of the brain, how it processes information, can it distinguish between the reality on a computer and the reality in real life? And if it can't, then, you know, is that almost allowing the computers the go-ahead?
Sure.
To become part of reality?
Yeah. This question gets at the essence of what, again, to the information concept, what is the purpose of this abundance of information? Well, much of it is in the form being used for propaganda purposes, in that it's crafted information to craft ideologies on a mass scale. So if you're putting out ideas at a large scale level, say you've got, you know, if you're talking about the mainstream media, that's a large scale broadcasting of ideas that you have. And that's a way to standardize, in a way, reality, standardized reality, because our ideas about the world shape our reality. Again, it's about the subjective mind. So it's about influencing people subjectively so that they come to specific conclusions that, if they were left to their own devices, that they were not saturated in information, then they would probably come to completely different conclusions on their own. They would be forced to think about things instead of being served things on a platter. And today we are being served information on a platter, and it's being done via technology. And at what point will all this information, these huge data sets on computers, at what point will that, or even could that, become our complete reality, that we actually start living there? That's what you're saying,
right,
with the virtual reality. Is that where we're going? It seems like we're taking steps bit by bit to actually be living in a virtual reality, and that seems to be what we're doing, and in a sense what a lot of people believe they want. They believe they want this sort of idealistic world.
Right. Well, you know, also in your book you say that, how do you go about enhancing people, turning them into post-humans, if no one is interested in the first place? And that's where we talk about propaganda, which is not only done through the media, but also films, you know, all kinds of things. And, you know, you went on to say the primary goal of Hollywood is to alter perceptions. Entertainment is merely a byproduct. And I found that fascinating because it made me think about it. That, you know, films really do help, in my mind, shape opinions and persuade people to believe in something. You know, why do you feel that film industries were created in the first place?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. Again, it's the broadcasting of a message, and film is, of course, art as well, and art is that's a huge topic in and of itself. You've got the arts and the sciences sort of mixing together, actually, with the Hermetic tradition and all that. You've got arts and sciences both being aspects of one idea, really. And art ties into the whole the word artificial. You can't spell artificial without art. So whether you're talking about, you know, something that is set apart from nature, in that it wouldn't grow out of the ground unless human intervention did something to create it. So, and this gets into sort of mystic philosophy as well, in that, well, art and science, they're actually aspects of nature, but they're more perfected aspects of nature because they are created with the light of intelligence. So this is all art and science is an enlightenment project because it's they're the enlightened outcome of man shaping the world. So one aspect of film is certainly it's art. It's meant to actually raise nature to higher levels of value, of gold and of light again. And so that's part of it.
Right. Well, your book is entitled Revolve, Man's Scientific Rise to Godhood, The Age of Transitions. What does the first part mean, revolve?
Revolve, yes. Well, it's many different meanings. Of course, it's the word evolve with an R in front of it. That's an important aspect of it. And with evolve, it's, of course, the life itself being raised to higher levels of value on a philosophical scale of value. So evolution is, you know, intelligence growing, physical life coming to fruition, basically. And we're being told that transhumanism now is the way for us to evolve because, again, it's the use of mind to raise the base nature, which is just the body without the mind. It's using the mind to evolve the body to higher states of gold, of value again, because enhancing intelligence with all these transhuman upgrades and doing all the rest of it, extending life, that's making a better vessel, and it's doing it through the light of science again. So that's the evolve part. And then revolve is this is a lot of it has to do with about instigating revolutionary movements within our world, within our society, because the whole transhuman idea is quite revolutionary in and of itself. You know, it's a whole new idea that would be a game changer for the entire world. So it would bring about a worldwide revolution. And that's what this whole thing ties into, is a world revolution to spark an unprecedented change in human history, to actually bring about the birth of a whole new human being.
Right. I see. Wow. Well, you know, when we talk about science, we talk about technology. A lot of us have technological appliances within our home, whether it's your iPhone, whether it's your computer, whether it's your dishwasher. We seem already to have invited technology happily into our homes, whether it be your Hoover, your radio. All of these are already, technology is already comfortable in our house. But when we talk about the history of technology, this is something I'm not quite clear on, and I think a lot of other people, we use this technology, we use the internet, we use all of these laptops, all of these PCs, but only few people actually know how to make them.
Yeah.
And know
yeah.
actually where they come from. So the bigger question I've always had is, where is all this technology coming from? Because it seems that there's always modifications within the technology. In fact, every year there seems to be a new phone, a new laptop, a new processor. But the question I've always had in my mind is, where is this technology coming from, and why do so many of us use it without actually knowing how to actually put it together or make it?
Yeah, that is a wonderful question, a great insightful question there, and there's a lot of aspects to a good answer to that question. There's a lot to think about there, because this gets to the essence of how technology alters our life, because as we grow with more and more technologies, more and more scientific techniques to do things, the individual person has less and less control over it. It's not an individual thing anymore. It's not because at a low level of technology, a single person can basically They know how their tools work. The tools are just simple tools for, you know, working the ground and growing crops and things like this. And the average person can understand that. But as technology grows, there's really no way for a single person to keep up with it. So it becomes this sort of race where you're in one sense trying to keep up with the pace set by technology, but at the same time, you have no way of understanding it. So it's beyond you. And at the same time, technology has altered us by raising the pace. And so where is this being developed from? Well, it's being developed by huge companies, which are themselves not into... Well, actually, this again is another philosophically interesting thing. Corporations themselves are actually designated as individual human beings with the rights and all that. I mean, this is pretty well known. There's a documentary called The Corporation, and it got into this. So they are actually, philosophically speaking and legally speaking, you can say that a corporation is a person, but it's a person that's made up of many different individual people who are actually hired and employed by that corporation to do the overall great work of that company.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, and it's, you'll read actual government documents and they get into this idea of the corporation and they talk about transhuman future. This was in the NBIC report that I put in my Age of Transitions films. It says this specifically, that a corporation in the future should be made up of cells of individuals, and the cells kind of passing from corporation to corporation where they're needed. But it refers to like the people working for the corporation as cells. So you've got the microcosm, macrocosm sort of deal. You've got the right. little people that are just cells in a body of this greater person, the corporation, which is the person who is inventing the technology and who has the understanding of the technology. It's a macro person. So the understanding goes beyond us. So I think herein we can understand the problem in that these macrocosmic organisms that are right. the ones that are understanding what's happening, and we're just kind of floating down the current that they're set, floating down the river with all this.
Right. Because, you know, when we do the history of humanity, there's in every country there's always been talk of wizards, magicians, sorcerers, princesses, fairies, you know, beings with extraordinary power. And when we talk of alchemy, I know you put in your book The Black Art, this has been used to control the populations, whether you look in Egypt, you know, whether you look in all kinds of places, in terms of alchemy, which is many would call magic, you know, and a lot of people say magic is when you don't understand how something works. Yeah. You know, the internet could be deemed as modern day magic because we use it, but no one actually understands how you can actually see something appear on your screen and touch the screen, but the person's not actually there. How I can make this call to you, and I could be in London, you can be in California, but we can actually talk. You know, this is a form of alchemy. So, you know, it's very interesting, you know, how, you know, beings have always used this kind of alchemy throughout the ages. There's always been documents. So I found that fascinating that you also included that in, because we feel that alchemy is still, not being used when in fact it could still be being used, just, you know, just labeled as a different thing.
Yeah. And that's why it's the black art, because it operates right. in the darkness of our ignorance being we don't even realize it's there, this force that's dramatically affecting our life. We're in the dark about it, so it remains a black art because we can't see.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's fascinating because, I mean, your book really covers so much. You know, it's difficult to know where to start, you know, but, you know, paradise engineering, which is, you know, the perfect bliss, you know, one way, you know, when I look at the internet, I feel that it's so great because it's really connecting, so many people from all around the world to actually be unified. But at the same time, you know, you even talk about it in chapter 5, the total destruction of privacy. I mean, we can look at social networks such as Facebook. You know, what's your view on social networks such as Facebook and YouTube, which is it's allowing people to really connect with one another?
Yeah.
Is there an ulterior motive lurking in the corner?
Yeah. Well, yes, I would say absolutely. And when you look at the connections of people who are involved with Facebook, I mean, it's the same old thing. Same private-public partnerships going on that we hear little news stories here and there about, you know, Google is doing this or the NSA is doing that, but rarely do the average people are they given something that puts all the pieces together at once? You had to do that kind of yourself. I mean, when it comes to digital communications, you have to realize that anything you do with a digital communication device could be basically recorded and saved forever. You know what I mean? And that goes with credit card transactions and the like, too. And with the whole total information awareness project of the Department of Defense back in 2002, I mean, that was the whole goal of that thing, was to literally use digital communications and to as the recording devices to record as much information as was worldly possible. So I mean, that was what they wanted to do. And again, bank records were part of that, and people's private phone calls and things like that. So you look at large projects like that and you understand that they are underway and that they're very real. And then at another, you also see that the proliferation of digital communication devices and them becoming more powerful and be able to do more and more and record increasingly detailed information when you think about it, because, right, you know, you got the right GPS with the locations. So now, like, our location in real time could be tracked, you know, and we're also feeding data into it, like, ooh, I'm at Peabody's now watching a show, right, you know, right, or I'm eating pizza, you know. So,
right.
And Facebook is kind of encouraging us to do that more and more, like, oh, yeah, let us know what you're doing. So absolutely, we're being monitored by these things. That's just a given. We have to understand that. We just need to, if we're going to use these things, we need to know that that's what's happening. But at the same time, that also is the normalizing process. Like, oh, okay, well, now I know I'm being watched now, so it's okay. So it's definitely.
But that's what I was thinking, because a lot of people would argue that it's harmless fun. And, you know, it's a lot of people would just go with the flow, literally. And I think that it's very subtle, this kind of technology we're using, because it does seem like just some fun. You know,
yeah, that's the multifaceted, like, nature.
You know, put your whole life on the internet and create like a digital profile of yourself. In fact, that you know, you can go on Google and click something, and they know already what you want to buy. And Google have a monopoly. Not only do they own YouTube, but I think they also own Facebook. And, you know, I mean, they really are. Everyone knows Google, and, you know, this company is, this search engine, this giant, already knows so much about so many of us.
It's
very clever, you know, how it works.
Yeah, they're basically the company that makes use of the internet for the government, basically, because they are working directly with the government. They came out in 2010 talking about how, you know, they work directly with the NSA. I mean, when they started up, this was basically the case, too. And Google is, you know, it's there up there in Silicon Valley, right by NASA. And I know that the Google jets land on Ames Research Center. They land there, and you've got the Singularity Institute also being out there, and Google also being a major contributor to Singularity Institute. The Singularity Institute being this major proponent for the whole transhuman project and artificial intelligence. They're the guys going out there with the propaganda. They're the major, the propaganda for, oh yeah, we need to make AI, we need to make the singularity idea, transhumanism. So all these companies, right, when you do just, it doesn't even require much searching at all. You just do a little bit and you're like, oh, okay, these these companies and these governmental institutions and all these different things, they're all part of one big project, really. It's all one large project, and that's pretty plain to see.
Right. Well, because, you know, you talk of the role of film and media, and, you know, we realize that Super 8, I think, is going to be the next big blockbuster to hit the screens. And that's, I'm not sure really what that's about, but I know it's about some kind of AI theme, you know, kind of technology, transhumanism type thing. And it just seems that, you know, this is a theme. You know, if you look at even Battle LA.
We're always United States Marine Corps, I should say. Yeah.
Right. Well, because that's the thing I was going to ask you the next thing. You know, in your book, you talked about how certain films to actually, because we know the role of a director in film is only to direct, but essentially where they get the money is from the producer who finances a film. And essentially, if you want to make a big blockbuster film, especially if it's something like The Avatar where you need tanks, you know, you're going to need a good friendship with the military bases who can actually lend you their equipment. Otherwise, you know, the expense is going to go off the roof. So, you know, please go into that in terms of the connection between Hollywood and the military and, you know, just how there's, you know, this is not something new. This is actually from the conception. You know, they've always worked in tandem.
Yeah. As you're saying before, like, how did Hollywood start up? It's always been, there's always been huge films made in tandem with the Pentagon and, to promote whatever the Pentagon's military objectives are at the time, the military objectives being far reaching. They don't only reach overseas to where the perceived battle is, but they also reach into the hearts and minds domestically here. So that's an important aspect of it. And that's why the various branches of the military all have entertainment liaison offices, which work with Hollywood producers intimately to produce films. And when a producer chooses to work with one of these liaison offices, they give over the power to the military to rewrite scripts, to write in characters, put themes in there, completely rework the film so that military objectives can be achieved. And again, this is the importance of propaganda. It's all about getting people's minds in tune with ideas, and this is all about a strategy. This is psychological warfare, actually.
Right.
And you know, it can be justified like, well, we're doing good. We're doing a good thing, and our military
right.
project. You know, they do believe that
right.
they're doing a good thing, but at the same time, all these movies about AI are most of them. You'll see so many of them have been made in tandem with the United States Air Force. I know the entire Transformers series has been made with the Air Force, and you've got Michael Bay and Steven Spielberg working with the Air Force on that. And there was that Eagle Eye film was made with the Air Force. That was a major AI film, and it also got
right.
into privacy issues and all that, like we were talking about earlier, and mixes that with the super intelligent AI idea. And there's so many examples of this, so it's rampant.
Right. You know, I was doing, you know, when we talk about health and you know, just health in general, I was actually doing some research, and it said that, you know, by 2020, the top leading disease in the world is going to be myopia, which is basically, you know, temporary blindness, you know, in the eyes, because of our, you know, most people are spending maybe 3-4 hours a day staring at a computer screen. In
yeah.
other times, it's a lot more than that. So, not only are they getting a repetitive strain injury, whether it's from their neck, from typing, or, you know, all kinds of things in terms of just the general health that, you know, being in front of a computer, is it normal? In fact, there's a great evolution poster, you know, going from the man bending
yeah.
down, standing up, to sitting down on the computer again.
That's right.
You know, although the technology, the internet is bringing a lot of creative freedom to many people, but, you know, in your view, what are the health aspects that go along with it that we need to look at. Maybe there are none. I don't know.
Well, sure. It's definitely a strain on the eyes looking at the computer monitor. And just, yeah, sitting around in general is always going to be not so good for your health. But again, if you want to get this into the whole transhuman idea, the concept is that we're going to go beyond monitors and all this, and it's all going to be beamed into our heads, and it's going to be a regular part of our life. So we'll be walking around living computations. You know what I mean? So we'll be doing this as we're just walking around in regular life. So that's where we're going. And in a way, you know, the whole sitting down from a monitor, that could be a way to like throw the whole old system out for the improvement of the new one. But at the same time, we have to be wary of, well, okay, there were health problems with the old one, and there will likely be new ones with this new advanced form. And what will they be? They could be something like that we don't even foresee now. And again, you know, it could.
Well, I mean, I definitely agree, because I feel that, you know, you talked about in your book, Mind Upload. BMI, brain machine interfaces, in terms of where people can literally just, you know, download information, you know, right into their brain. And I definitely feel that, you know, this isn't a long way away, simply because, we're living, many people are in a hurry to get nowhere fast. Essentially, we want a quick fix. A lot of us, we don't have time due to our lifestyles. You know, our lifestyles are very fast and furious. And we don't, you know, so if someone offered us a solution where, okay, if you want to read a book, well, you know, we can download the information into your brain in 2 minutes.
You know, exactly.
A lot of people might opt for that already. You know, when I look at transhumanism, you know, I see cosmetic surgery as already a kind of part of transhumanism.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, that's just the first step, but we look at that in terms of just kind of, you know, normal healthcare. But that's, you know, a lot of people are going for that, you know.
Yeah, you know, willingly. Everything is about the quick fix, as you're saying. And what happens, I feel the whole connection to data and, you know, the connecting your mind to this hive mind intelligence, whatever it is, connecting to a technology that can instantly beam all this information to your brain instantaneously. Well, that's just a byproduct of this. We need answers. We need everything right away. We don't want to sit down and analyze things and think about things and ponder and, you know, be like, oh, okay. Like, actually sit down and think. We don't want to do that. We want instant answers. So I feel like the whole transhuman connecting the brain to this huge stream of information, it's just a byproduct of that. And it gets into the same problem of, well, is information actually wisdom? I don't think so. I think that information is just, you know, it's info being fed to you. It's something being fed to you. It's not, doesn't require critical thinking ability. And will the connection, would somebody being connected to this technological whatever it is, that's downloading information to you, would it actually make you smarter, like transhumanists say it would, or would it actually make you stupider in a way? Would it make you the product of whoever's feeding you that, or whatever's feeding you that information to begin with? I feel it would be an enhanced way to lose yourself within all this information. We're seeing the first starts of that with, we're flooded with information. We don't know what to make of it because we're not taking time to critically analyze it. We're just being instantly downloaded all the time. And so we lose the sense of ourselves.
That's so true. Well, because we can look at advertisements, you know, there's any moment, you know, these corporations can, you know, they're going to flash you with some kind of imagery because they know that you might just say, oh, it's just a picture, but, you know, that's already logged into your subconscious. You might even go to sleep dreaming about their product.
Yeah.
To wake up only to reach into your wallet and pull out your credit card to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in your book, you know, you talked about how, you know, like we're living in a kind of quick fix society. Essentially, the body is speeding up, but, you know, the mind is slowing down in terms of how we're looking at things critically. Are we able to think outside of the box? And, I look at it that, you know, to sort of think critically, you have to slow down your body. Yeah. But then again, if we were to do that, then this system will crumble because it relies on people drinking caffeine in Starbucks to give them that energy to actually keep, because I see things as we are the glue that holds this this society in place, superstructure in place.
Exactly.
We are the glue. We are the binding. So the moment that we change our perception, essentially everything else shifts as well.
Yeah, we're all wired on caffeine today, and tomorrow we could be wired directly into a large computer system that is beaming information to our head and, making us work even faster than we are now. And it'd be a way to make us more efficient, that's for sure. But is it actually better? That I wonder about. Yeah.
Right. Well, you also talk about in your book, which I find so excellent, in terms of just the post-genderism. We can look at male and female today. Many of us, we are still living in these stereotypical roles, or a woman is this, a man is this. We can look at the rise of internet dating as a way of meeting people. In fact, I'll give you a little story. I was actually with my friend, and there were all of these people around in Hyde Park, and I was like, he was like, the reason why people aren't talking to each other is not because we don't want to, it's because we don't know how.
Yeah.
And I'm feeling that's the same thing with male and female relationships, because everything has become so skewed. Yeah. Males don't actually know how to actually connect with a female, and vice versa, because we're still we have so many stereotypes.
Yeah. Ideas about male and female, again, are fed to us through propaganda, and again, it's a subconscious thing. We all soak it up, and so we're all no one's immune to this, and nobody's immune to the subconscious programming that we're all swimming in, and that's what every single person needs to come to terms with too, is that, okay, my subconscious is incredibly powerful, even more powerful than my conscious mind. So with what I have of my conscious mind, I have to be aware that my subconscious is far greater, and it's being influenced by everything that I see. And yes, part of these ideas that subconscious programming we're swimming in, it has to do with gender and what we are, as male or female. And that, I mean, what's more important than that? Our gender, because it's, right. It's incredibly, that's our creative power there. That's our way to actually reproduce. And I mean, I feel like
I definitely understand what you're saying, because, there's definitely a lack of intimacy between males and females. And, it seems that many people hide behind the internet in a way, especially when it comes to relationships. I think that's why there's been such a rise in internet dating, because there just isn't enough time to meet anybody on a day-to-day level in real life.
Yeah, true.
So because of our lifestyles, it's like we want a quick fix as well. We want like a quick, you go onto the internet, you type in a specific specification of your ideal partner, and there they are. And instead, because we don't really want to do the hard work, get our fingers dirty, and actually meet someone in real life, because we just don't have time.
This gets back into, we're almost not allowed to have any time to go out and explore the world on our own terms. Right. We're always, living on somebody else's terms, on somebody else's borrowed time, and we have no time, and we're always, it gets into the same problem where we're just, we're worked to death, literally. Death, not just, death being that we don't have any self anymore, because we don't have time to explore and self-reflect and understand who we are. So if we can't understand who we are, how are we possibly able to hold a real relationship with somebody else? Because the prerequisite is understanding yourself before you can even do that. So in a world of constant distraction, constant entertainment, it becomes hard for a person to do that, and naturally, natural relationships crumble as a result of that.
Right. As well, what I'm coming to find, even in my own personal experience, is that, we're living in a world of appearances where appearance is everything. And I think when we talk about male and female relationships, you know, that's what a lot of us are looking for most of the time. It's appearance, whether that be the appearance of your bank account, whether about the appearance of your car, the appearance of your mansion, or the appearance of a woman's beauty, and all of these things. But we forget the most fundamental thing, which is, you know, people find that out halfway through the marriage, which is the programming, which is the most essential part. Because a lot of people are in a relationship and then they find out, okay, what other person believes, and that really essentially is the final thing which actually determines whether or not the relationship can last, is, you know, the belief system each partner holds.
That's right.
You know, and that's normally the crunch.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we've all been led to the superficial relationship to desire that. We've been led to these superficial things, and we haven't gone deeper, and that's a major problem. And a lot of it, again, if you want to tie this back to Facebook and, you know, the whole digital identity, it's about the inflation of the persona in its own right, and it sort of consuming the rest of the individual, because we get this idea of a persona. It's just this idealized version of ourself. And where do we get this idea of an idealized version of ourself? Well, again, it gets back to propaganda and all the ideas put out there in the media that influence our minds. That's where many of us are getting this persona from, this idealized self, and then we fall into that, and then whatever, you know, structure that persona has, it's going to take on a life of its own and lead us to ruin if we don't question that identity.
Right. Well, you know, as I see it, you know, the media is almost like it's bottomless. You know, it just is on and it's endless. You know, it's restless, and it keeps on pumping out. You know, that's all it does. It's a machine. Ultimately, it's a machine, and you know, you can't you know, use a machine to get rid of a machine.
No.
And I think, you know, that's what I've come to realize. It's like, if you do that, you essentially just become the machine, you know.
Yeah, totally.
Because it's so powerful. I mean, it's like, if you go to every country in the world, they've got Coca-Cola. When we talk about the role of logos, you know, I know you have a lot of knowledge in terms of symbolism, you know, which is all around us. You know, what's your... you know, your view of symbols, you know, even in when we talk of the Nike symbol, you know, all of these symbols, you know, how do they actually affect us on a day-to-day level?
Sure. Well, even the term logo, the meaning of the term logo is meaning. So logo is meaning. A symbol is meaning. It's just pure, raw meaning. It defines an idea. It's a definition of an idea. That's what a logo is. And logo also ties into logos, which is love, which is also another word for the word. So it's communication. So logos being love, and symbolism being the more perfect version of communication that's beyond language. It's a language of nature in the mystery tradition. So on a very deep level, these symbols are communicating with us because they are words, they're meaning, they're symbols, and they're the language of the mysteries, the language of nature. They're crafted to get us to understand things, and these ideas are being put out in logos. Again, they work at such a deep level of communication beyond words that they affect our subconscious mind. And the spoken word is kind of the exoteric obvious, like, okay, we understand when somebody tells us straight out, we want to build a robot. Somebody says, we want to build a robot. Now, anybody can understand that. But if you build a symbol that kind of conveys that same idea, you could flash the symbol at somebody and they would never really realize, like, oh yeah, okay, whatever, there's that symbol again. Like they don't even look at it. But subconsciously they understand that symbol is telling them, I want to make a robot. So therefore they're affected at a deep level, like, oh, somebody wants to make a robot, I want to make a robot too. But they don't consciously ever come to understand that. It's within their subconscious mind. So that's so much about what logos and symbolism is doing to us. It's shaping our subconscious.
And a lot of people, when we look at the internet, whether you go on YouTube, there seems to be a lot of conscious information. I don't know if it's conscious.
Yeah.
There's a lot of information floating around there. You know, a lot of people claim to know the truth about the world.
Yeah.
You know, the Illuminati, all of these things. You know, it's almost like it's become a kind of joke.
Yeah.
If you mention it, I mean, people don't really take you seriously. That's why I don't really mention the Illuminati a lot, because people think you're some nuthead.
Yeah.
You know, who is, you know, it's become almost, and I think it's obviously done on that way on purpose, because the moment you mention, oh, secret society, people think, oh my gosh, this is a paranoid person. But one thing I wanted to get at, there was a film, Zeitgeist, the latest one, which I think a lot of people saw on YouTube, kind of mainstream.
Yeah.
But there's actually a scientist in there called Jacques Fresco, who had written a book as well. And, you know, I think this ties into transhumanism, because he actually had drawings of the perfect society, and he actually showed diagrams where there would be no cars, essentially. You know, and it was... Yeah, I just wanted to have your view on the whole Zeitgeist movement, because at the same time they do expose certain things, but you know it seems so mainstream that what's the catch 22? You know, and you have all of the, you know, the Venus Project and what have you, who are really looking to bring it about change in the world, but you know, what's your take on that?
Yeah, well, it's another utopian pursuit. They're pursuing another utopia, and you'll notice when you get into the details of their particular utopia, they line up pretty closely with those of more official channels that aren't considered, you know, the fringe, you know, because the Zeitgeist movement is apparently the counterculture, but they're actually, one of their ideals is building an artificial intelligence. Well, I don't know if they even call it artificial intelligence, but a massive computer system that can crunch numbers and run all the data to intelligently run society, basically. It's a perfected technocracy that they literally want to create, this computer system that sort of knows all and sees all and tells us what to do and administers everything fairly. Well, you know, that's the same thing again. The same thing that Google and all the rest are doing. It's the same exact thing as building this perfected technocracy and using AI and all the rest to do it. And there's many of other things, but you know, it's just another utopia, which is the same utopia.
Right. Well, you know, I definitely saw that in a way that, you know, I think that you know, I think a lot of people are getting information, and the problem is if you get information and you haven't done your own research, there's a big problem there. And a lot of people, you know, they're young as well, and they're getting this information, and they think they know it all. But at the same time, they haven't really done their own research. You know, they haven't really had time to think critically about it.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people are just regurgitating information out. And, you know, believe, because it's very believable, this information, you know, it's presented in a way which makes people want to have hope, you know, and, you know, give up their, you know, their critical thinking. You know, we just, oh yeah, let's go ahead with the plan.
Without
reading the small print, you know, let's go for it. It sounds good. we don't even know the ins and outs of it.
No.
We're willing to give up, you know, everything for it. You know,
that's the revolutionary movement at work, and that's what I was talking about earlier with revolution. This is the inciting revolution on a mass scale, and the revolutionary never really has thought things out. They've just been like, they've just wanted change real quick, and they want it fast, and it revolve, you know, you're spinning round and round, you know, you're on the merry-go-round, you're spinning, but you spin around too fast, you get dizzy, and you'll fall over, so you're not understanding. My opinion is that revolutionary movements of many different types and of many different factions are being fomented at this time in history purposely as part of a process to get everything to break down, to get society to break down in order to transition us into the new society, of which I think that we get a good idea when we read all the papers. Again, it's this idea of a technocracy paradise engineering project. So revolutionary movements are kind of the catalyst. Right.
We talked about in your book the New Renaissance, which I found fascinating as well, because I feel that, you know, throughout human history, there's always been changes. You know, this is nothing new. I mean, we could talk, you know, people feel the world is going to end next year. And, you know, the world has always been changing. I mean, you just have to look in history. History may not be true, but we know that the world, people have always had, you know, it's just like the car now. You know, if you were to ask people 1,000 years ago, if there will be cars, people would be terrified. But, you know, this is the change which has come about. So it's inevitable that there's always going to be changes. You know, absolutely, this is just the world how it is. You know, life is about change. So it's inevitable that there's, you know, obviously going to be a grand change, which is happening already in terms of technology.
We're in the middle of it right now. We need to realize that. Yeah, I mean, it's constantly happening all around us. Everybody's got this idea like, oh, there's going to be this new world order, there's going to be this utopia, or our revolution's going to bring out this, that, or the other. But we're never reflecting upon where we are in the moment. We don't understand like how far we've actually come. That's an issue too, that we're never actually reflecting on who we are and what we are in the moment.
Well, I wanted to talk about, you know, education, because I always say, you know, everything starts from, you know, the actual root, actually, the seed of the problem. So when we talk about, you know, a lot of us, you know, we are educated through mainstream educational systems. And I think that's where a lot of the programming takes place. Some, you know, they say, I think it was Dr. Bruce Lipton, who said, the first 7 years of a child is the most critical, because, you know, whatever goes in the first 7 years of a child's life is usually what stays with them and actually shapes their personality to a large extent.
Yeah.
You know, what's your view in terms of, because I was actually talking to someone and they said their child had an iPad. You know, when we talk about transhumanism, and when we look at the role of technology in terms of children, young children, infants, babies, already being, which is taking place, whether it's being used to teach them, you know, what's your whole view of the role of technology in education?
Sure. Well, again, as you were saying, clearly education shapes the minds of young people, and it gives them, it defines their whole worldview that they take with them for their entire life. And that's incredibly powerful thing that we all have to realize is going on with education, and we all should be playing a part in saying what that education actually is, of course, because it's so important. And technology is now just the norm, you know. I mean, used to be middle school. I know when I was in middle school, I was starting to learn computers, you know, basic computers, PCs and all that. But now it's even younger than that. You know, children are being raised with computers and ever more advanced computers. So as the technology is advancing, it's shaping the minds of young people. So this kind of ties into the whole transhuman concept too, in that the technology is now what is shaping the identity of the youth, and it will shape them for their entire lives. So a part of that technology, if you could say that technology has a personality or an identity, a part of that identity is now worn off on the human being, on the child, and they take that forever. And I would tend to think that a young person brought up with technology would be more willing to further that process of connecting to technology even more intimately and taking a transhuman upgrades and things. And I think that's a large part of the idea here, you know what I mean, is that it's going to be a natural evolution of sorts, just because of familiarity. The technology becomes a part of the family, sort of.
Right. Well, I mean, it's funny because, you know, whenever I see, you know, commercials for you know, products such as PCs, you know, a lot of time they try to glamorize it, make it glossy, you know, make it attractive, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you say, oh, I want this BlackBerry. And it's almost like if you don't have it, then, you know, you're living in the Stone Age. You know, it's like it's a competition thing. You know, a lot of the time, you know, it's like if you don't have an iPhone, then, you know, you don't have a lot of money. You know, all of these things, it's very interesting, the advertisement that goes behind it. A lot of the time they put a sexy woman, mm-hmm. you know, on the front cover.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's very clever, you know, the tricks that they use.
yeah. Because
the tricks of the trade.
Yeah, totally. It is totally the tricks of the trade. And they're just psychological little tricks that leverage your instincts that are you're born with genetically. I mean, they're there. They're partially playing to your survival instincts and, you know, just primitive drives like, you know, you're attracted to the opposite sex, obviously. So, you know, they just take the most basic thing and they use it to their own advantage because they know that you can't help but react. And right. I mean, that's a pretty simple thing. That's all they do.
And well, that's so true as well. You know, when we talk about, you know, one thing, you know, a lot of people say what keeps the world going and a lot of people say it's money. You know,
yeah.
The materialists say it's money. Spiritualists say it's air. So for the material, this, you know, living in this 3D reality, you know, a lot of people say it's money. The money never sleeps. You know, you had Wall Street.
Yeah.
And when we talk about money, you know, I do feel that, you know, it's tied in to all kinds of, you know, all kinds of things in terms of that. A lot of people don't have time because we're working for money.
Yes.
And, you know, this whole transhumanist agenda, you know, a lot of people aren't even aware it's going on because, you know, we're too busy trying to make a living.
Yeah.
You know, actually, there was a funny thing. I think it was David Icke who was speaking. A comment I read said that it's a shame that a lot of people won't listen to David Icke because the rich people are not concerned about what he's saying because they're comfortable in their position. The middle class people are not concerned because they're aspiring to be rich.
There you go.
The lower class aren't concerned because they're too busy trying to work. So all it leaves is the people that actually want to seek truth. But, you know, it's very interesting, this whole notion of money. In fact, you know, when I was doing research, I found that, you know, making money digital. In fact, if you were to take out $100,000 out of your bank account, you know, everything is digital. You know, in fact, money has the value has no value. It's just electronic digits on a screen.
Sure.
You know, I find that fascinating in terms of, you know, where do you think money is going? Because you know, I think everyone's in debt. You know?
Oh yeah.
It's like you know. Money is such an illusion, but at the same time, because we give it energy, it's a reality. And a lot of people, we don't have time because we're trying to get money. Maybe if we had money, then we might have time to think critically. But, you know, where do you think money comes in terms of transhumanism? What's the link there? Because, you know, money is what governs so many of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone is trying to make enough money to become, I don't know what to do, but, you know, we need money. So, you know, where does money come into this?
Sure. Well, fundamentally, money is just an idea, like anything else that's intangible like that. It's just an idea to get us motivated, to move us, to get us working away and working on projects. And so it's a motivating idea, really, at its essence. And if you take a look at our money system currently, it's fairly obvious when you look at the basics of how, you know, the fractional reserve banking works and just how our entire banking system works. It obviously just keeps piling on debt. It creates debt that can never be paid back. It's impossible to do so. So, I mean, by its very essence, like the most simple terms, you can see that the system was set up to create debt and be destroyed, basically. I mean, there's no way that you can fiscally pull this thing off. So it seems to me that it was designed to self-destruct at some point. So this money system was put into motion with the full intent and knowledge that it would self-destruct at some point down the line, which could be advantageous if you want to shift gears into a new form, a completely different system, perhaps even without money, or because money, again, is a motivating factor. It's what motivates people to do things. As you laid that out clearly, it's motivating us on all different levels, like, oh, I want to be this or I want to do that, so I need money to do so. Well, you could use a whole different motivating factor. It's just you could use some sort of digital currency, or you could use just a simple system of rewards and punishment. You know what I mean? Like if you do this, then you'll get this reward, or if you do something bad, we'll punish you in this way. That could be a new form of money too. And the whole transhuman thing, it could tie into the whole transhuman thing in that, you know, you get little money could be little electrical impulses that are sent to your brain that make you feel good, and like, oh, I want to feel good, so I'm going to do right. this so that I get the electrical shock to my brain so I feel good. That could become become money in a transhuman world, you know what I mean? So right. it could get really weird, but at its basic elements, it's just about motivation and reward and punishment.
Well, instant pleasure, isn't it? I mean, you could probably buy emotions.
yeah.
You know, which is probably all we're already doing anyway. But, you know, just to wind down the show, really it's been a great honor to have you dive with us onto Infinite Waters. I thank you once again for taking time out of your busy schedule. I just wanted to, you know, you talk about lastly in your book, worldwide death and ritual rebirth. Please just touch on that because that, you know, I think that a worldwide death, you know, I do feel that, you know, this system is crumbling, not because I want it to, but because it's just I see that the veil has almost been pierced so much that it's become a comedy show.
Yeah.
You know, it's become where, you know, it's almost like you know, it's become, you know, very fanciful. You know, it's become that, you know, the politicians, we can tell that, you know, they're just taking orders, you know, they're just reading off a script. You know, a lot of people can't, but I feel that there's also a lot of people who can actually tell these things. I think a lot of people's eyes are actually widening. You know, even people that want eyes were once closed, they're beginning to sort of question reality.
Yeah.
To say, okay, this doesn't make sense. You know, I've worked 50 years my whole life and I'm just going to my graveyard. You know, yeah. What's the point? You know, I definitely feel there's definitely a spirit of revolution in the masses, which is saying that you know, we deserve more, you know, we deserve a life which is more sustainable. You know.
Yeah, well, this ties into what I was saying about the banking system being designed to fail in the beginning. You know what I mean? It's coming to the point where the entire system, governmental, social, political, all these things are coming to a head where they're self-destructing and they're being destroyed on purpose to make way for and what is believed to be a new, more enlightened system, a better system. So to make way for the new system, the old one has to die. And tied up within the new system is not only a social, political, economic system, but it's also a biological system, a new human being. That's where the transhuman aspect of all this comes in. So all these things that are purposely dying and falling around us are to make way for this new birth of the new man, which is the transhuman man. And what I'm saying is that this is actually all being done on purpose. It's all part of an orchestrated plan, and it's all part of an enlightenment project to enlighten the entire world, because in the secret societies, the mysteries, the second birth, the death and rebirth ritual is the coming into the light. You know, it's the enlightenment of the initiate. So we are all part, every single human being on the planet is part of the macrocosmic initiate that is coming into this whole new age paradigm and being remade into a new man. It's happening on a worldwide scale. And yeah, I would say to everybody, just realize that the world falling apart all around you is being done on purpose to bring in this whole enlightenment system and to make you more valuable, to raise you from the base metals to gold. So you're being turned into gold through this whole process.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that, you know, that's the thing, because I feel that, you know, when I said, you know, one of the first questions I ask you is, where is this technology coming from? We don't know. I don't know where this laptop is coming from. I don't know how it's made. No one knows how the internet, how the internet actually works.
Nope.
You know, we could think we like to think we do, but we really don't. I mean, there's a higher, in my mind, there's a higher sorcery at work there in terms of that. You know, the technology that certain people have are probably 100 years ahead of this one, technology we're using. Because for anything to go mainstream, you know, there's so many tests that have to be carried out. It could take up to decades for, you know, a mainstream product to hit, you know, to actually enter, you know, the mainstream. It's not just suddenly released for everyone to have technology. You know, there's so many tests that have to be carried out for it to enter the mainstream.
It's released when people are ready for it. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know, I think one question a lot of people might be thinking now is, you know, what the hell do I do? what am I supposed to do? Where do we go from it? Because at the moment, it seems like I'm damned if I do and I'm damned if I don't.
That's right. Yeah.
You see, I think that's what a lot of people get from with everything which is going around, you know, that a lot of people would just go along with the tide because they feel that, I'm only one person and, you know, there's nothing I can do about it. Where does one go from here? Even with certain information, what can one individual do?
Sure. Well, one individual can do a whole lot in my personal experience. I mean, not just putting out information, but just connecting with people on a day-to-day basis and talking with them and be like, hey, you know, did you ever think of things this way or that way? I mean, there's a lot to be said for that, and it goes a long way. And in furthering your understanding of the world, I mean, getting closer to the truth, you're never going to get the whole truth, but getting as close to it as you come, I mean, there's real value in that. And just because, you know, the whole world is falling apart all around us and we can understand that, we gain something in knowing what that actually means, in intelligently knowing what that means. We'll be less likely to fall into the reactive revolutionary movements and just be serving somebody else's purpose. So the real goal here is finding out our own purpose and how to serve that, and how to be unique and sort of a glitch in the system. That's kind of a personal goal of mine, is a personal pleasure I get is being a little glitch in the system when I can be. I'm not always good at that either, because we all, you know, we're all part of the system too, and we all fall into it. So, you know, it's just finding your own personal way to do all those things, and there's real value in that.
Well, I mean, I definitely can agree, because I definitely know that it's only a few people that can actually, that set things in motion. You know, it's very interesting. You know, it's only a few artists who actually, you know, we're living in their kind of reality. You know, architects, you know, I mean, you look at, architects such as, you know, Leonardo da Vinci, who's like a master builder. And, you know, when you have someone of that caliber, you realize that, they're individuals who actually are master builders. In fact, you know, but what's happened is that everyone is just living in one reality, when essentially everyone should be a master builder, in my mind. You know, everyone should be an architect of their own reality, and at the same time appreciate other people's realities. But what's happened is that, you know, we've been lumped into a consensus reality.
Yeah.
And, it's just like Aldous Huxley said, we've come to actually enjoy our slavery. That's where we find ourselves. You know, we enjoy slavery.
That's right.
Which is, you know, it's very interesting. But, your work, reading your book, fantastic work. I can definitely recommend it to the Infinite Waters listeners and everyone that tunes into the show and gets it in the archive, because it's really a monumental work. And I definitely feel that, you know, it's laid a foundation which would actually allow people, because I always say everything is like in a time capsule. because there is no time, essentially, people can, you know, always go back in time to look at certain things, you know, maybe 20 years down the line and say, oh, I get it now.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, isn't it? Everyone getting it at a different time and space. You know, some people, they may not be ready for this information now.
Sure.
But they might be ready in tomorrow. Who knows what's gonna happen tomorrow? You know, you might lose your job. You know. You know. But
go a little crazy.
Don't go crazy. Well, that's the thing. I think, you know, a lot of people, when they do lose a job, it's almost you know, because we're so into this system. Once you get disconnected to it from it, you don't even know what to do. I remember when I sort of left my job, I was thinking, gosh, you know, this is strange. You know, when you wake up. Realize that you have so much freedom, you know.
What do I do with it?
Right. Sometimes you want to be in, if you want to go to work on time and be shouted by your boss, because then at least you have a position to play.
Yeah.
You know, once you have all of this time on your hands, you know, it's scary at first, because, and I think that's the thing with humanity, we're scared of this freedom. It's not easy.
Yeah. No.
It's not easy realizing that you can actually do whatever you want.
It's a responsibility. It's tough. Yeah. It's very tough.
Right. But it's beautiful.
Apparently it's hard.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think it is beautiful when you realize how much power you do have, you know, but, you know, like I said, again, you know, it's been phenomenal to have you on the show. And, we've been speaking to Aaron Franz, the author of Revolve, Man, Scientific Rights, The Godhood, The Age of Transitions. You can actually pick up the book at www.theageoftransitions.com. I'll put it on the site. And please, Aaron, just like I said, thank you once again for taking time out of your busy schedule to dive with us. Just give us information where we can actually purchase the book again, and any upcoming projects, what you have going on, you know, let us know, please.
Well, thank you again, Ralph. It's been a real pleasure having this conversation. This is a really fun interview.
You'll be back for a third time.
Great. Well, I look forward to it, man. It's going to be good.
Okay.
And yeah, and my website, as you said, it's The Age of Transitions. Basically, theageoftransitions.com has all my material. It has the old documentary that you can watch. I also have other selected videos that will help you understand the whole transhuman concept. I have some free downloads, like PDFs. You can get the first chapter of my book, Revolve, as a PDF from theageoftransitions.com. So download it, pass it out, you know, read it. And you can also get Revolve, Man, Scientific Rights, of Godhood, the paperback from my website. I also have a link to the ebook. If you buy the paperback, you actually get a copy of the Age of Transitions documentary on DVD. So that's available from the website. And current projects are, I'm working on a radio series about the ancient mysteries where I get into signs and symbols. It's called Under the Sun. So check that out. It's going to be many episodes. And I'm also kicking myself in the butt to work on this Age of Transitions 2 documentary, which I'm in process of. But yeah,
wow.
I need to.
Can't wait.
Yeah,
I can't wait. Because I, you know, by the first one, you know, which was phenomenal, I think I remember when you were on Red Ice once, you know, and that's how I came to know of you. But, you know, I feel that, you know, it was such a powerful documentary, The Age of Transitions, you know, so well done. So, second one is going to be a real treat. You know, I'll be your first viewer for that.
Thank you.
But, you know, it does take time, I understand, because, you know, when you're talking about video editing, filmmaking, you know, all of these things, because we're living in a quick fix society, many of us just want it done by tomorrow. But, you know, you can get it done by tomorrow, but it won't be very good.
Yeah. You know, exactly.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
You know, it takes time, you know, unfortunately. Or fortunately, you know, you have to understand that if you want to build something to last, you know, you have to be patient.
Yes.
You know, because there is no quick fix. You know,
No, there isn't. Not at all.
Right. You know, but definitely once again, Aaron, thank you so much for taking time out and diving with us. I definitely hope you can dive with us again in the near future.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. And thank you to everyone who has been listening and who will actually check this out in the archive, this is Infinite Waters Radio. Keep diving, stay diving, and don't forget, question everything. Thank you.
Infinite Waters Radio.